Hi, and welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris from PleasureMechanics.com, and on today's episode, we have a very special guest, Joan Price. Author and speaker Joan Price is an advocate for ageless sexuality. Joan started as a health and fitness writer and started writing about sex after having a passionate relationship in her late 50s and early 60s. This relationship led her to write three books about senior sex, including the award-winning Naked at Our Age, Talking Out Loud About Senior Sex. Her new book is The Ultimate Guide to Sex After 50, How to Maintain or Regain a Spicy, Satisfying Sex Life. Now here's our interview with Joan Price. Joan, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Let's start by busting the first big myth about senior sex. Many people believe that sex disappears later in life, but the data shows that more than half of men and almost a third of women over the age of 70 reported that they were still sexually active, with a third of these men and women having frequent sex, meaning at least twice a month. Given this information, why is it still shocking for people to think about sex after 50?
I think it's what I call the ick factor. That's when people think, ew, older people, wrinkly people having sex, that's disgusting. And we just need to overcome that with the idea that sexuality is our birthright. It doesn't have to end. There's no expiration date on our sexuality. And you know, the statistics that you quoted, I have a feeling that one of the reasons that they aren't higher is that so many of us are single at our age. We've lost a spouse, we've lost a partner, or there's been a later life divorce, or for one reason or another, we're not partnered. And so if we're asked, how often are we having sex? We may think that only partner sex gives us the answer to that. Mm. Whereas if they made clear partnered or solo sex, we might get a different answer to that question.
Interesting. And where do you think that ick factor comes from? Is it just the culture of youth that we're obsessed with? Is it people looking at their parents and grandparents? What are the roots of that?
A lot of it is the youth culture that on the idea that only firm, unwrinkled, hard bodies can be sexy, that's the, just because something is the sign of fertility doesn't mean it is the only sign of sexual vibrancy. Mm. So we just have to get past it. And often, and also our media doesn't show us sexy older people. When it shows us older people being sexual, it's usually done for a comedy effect. Oh, isn't that ludicrous? Har, har, har. And I would just love to see dynamic, beautiful older people as accepted as normal because we're sexual. Not as, oh, wow, here are three older people who are sexual that we can count them on less than all the fingers of one hand. And that's proof what? That's proof that we don't see it as normal. I'd like for us to be able to say, oh, there are just so many vibrant sexual people of older age that I can't even count them.
And do you think men and women are judged differently? Like, I can think of a lot of older, distinguished actors that are considered very sexy, and some more and more female actors that are aging beautifully. But do you think women face more pressure in this regard?
I think they do, because there's always that dynamic that an older man, this is a funny thing. In one way, we view older men as ludicrous too. The old geezer idea, aha, ha, he's chasing after younger women. Isn't that hilarious? But on the other hand, we see older men that if they're in a position of power or money, then yeah, they're seen as sexual because of the power and money. Mm. It isn't necessarily because they are seen as attractive. But, you know, give me Robert Redford any time over any of the young, sexy men. I would go with Robert Redford any time. And in fact, Betty White was asked once, is there anything that you regret never having done? And her reply was Robert Redford.
And she's a great example of someone who still is so joyful in her body and jokes about sex and...
That's right.
Yeah.
There was, in fact, a Saturday Night Live spoof that she, a parody that she was on, and she was kissing this young hot guy. I just think we need to see that as, of course that happens. But I'd love to see him her kissing an older guy too. That it's not just that, oh, this young hot guy wants her, or she wants him, and he's giving in. You know, let's just make it normal. We're sexy. That's it. We're sexy.
That's right. And we hear from so many people who are in their 60s and 70s who report that they're having the best sex of their life because they're retired. They have time to treat it like a hobby. They have time for slower sex. And as young people in our 30s, that's so exciting and refreshing to hear. And I don't know why we can't get that message out more, that your golden years can also be your sexiest years.
Well, that's my mission, and you're helping me do it. And not only the things you said, but there's more to it. At an older age, we know ourselves. We know ourselves sexually. We know ourselves emotionally. We know what we want in a relationship. We've made our relationship mistakes. I mean, let's hope we have by now. But most of us have, okay, now I know what I don't want to do again. Now I know what I do want to try. Now I know the kind of person I'm looking for. I know who I am. We've learned to talk. We've learned to communicate, to have dialogues about sex, but about other things too. And now when we're ready for a relationship, it has the potential of being something extraordinary. That's what I found. That's why I changed my life instead of being a health and fitness writer and speaker. And before that, a high school English teacher, I decided I'm going to totally change careers because I want to be talking out loud about senior sex. And I want that to be my life now. And it has become so.
We are so glad you made that choice.
Me too.
So beyond the attitudes and the self-knowing, what are some of the biggest ways sex changes after 50?
It changes, our bodies change. We have slower arousal. We need more stimulation. And we learn to communicate that, or I hope we do. I mean, sometimes we don't. The people who write me or speak to me about their sexual problems, which happens to me all the time, then that's one of the wonderful things about my work is I do get to help people. But they tell me, you know, this has changed for me. That's changed for me. I don't feel, I don't have orgasms the way I used to. I don't have responsiveness the way I used to. And what do I do about that? Or maybe women say to me, my husband has stopped wanting to have sex and he won't talk about it. So all of these things, I'm trying to get people, get a whole generation and the generations to come to talk out loud about this, to talk out loud about what's changed, to talk to our doctors, to talk to our partners, to talk to potential partners, to talk to our friends, to just make it something that we do. Okay, here's what's going on with me. Where do I find help? Thank you very much. Because there, for every problem, there is a solution. We just don't know where to find that. And that's the reason I've written 3 self-help books. And my new book, The Ultimate Guide to Sex After 50, goes even deeper into the medical problems, because that's so much of what challenges us. Our bodies change. We have responses to medical conditions. We have responses to the medications we have to take that have sexual side effects that often our doctors don't even think to tell us. They don't know it's important to us. So I advocate saying to our doctors, this is my sexual experience right now. Here's what's going on for me. I need help from you. And if you can't help me, please refer me to someone who can. And I think if we all said that, we would first of all let our doctors know that sexuality is important to us. And we would also be pushing them to find the answers for us because they often don't know. They say, it's because you're old. No, not good enough, doc. Not good enough.
Yeah, and that takes a lot of courage to speak up for yourself in that way. And I think you give people tools and encouragement to do that. And if more people did it, it would be less scary, right?
It would be less scary, and it would be a whole different world when we did it. What we're doing, if we do this, is we're paving the way for the people to come, to follow in our footsteps, because we're saying to the entire medical profession, you know, let's say we think we're just at a meeting with our own doctor, but that doctor's going to leave and go away and talk to his or her colleagues or bring it up at a meeting and say, hey, I have this 75-year-old patient who is saying, help me with vaginal pain. I have 6 or 7 older guys who are saying, no, it's not enough for you to say, well, yeah, erectile dysfunction is normal. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. Let's find out what's causing the erectile dysfunction. Erectile dysfunction is a symptom. It's not a diagnosis.
Mm. And it can be a symptom of health issues, but also of anxiety or
performance anxiety. It can be a problem in the relationship. It can be any number of health issues. It can be a sign of heart disease, diabetes, many other health conditions that may be undiagnosed. So if we say, if we are willing to say, okay, I have erectile dysfunction, or an abrupt change in my erectile response. I used to have regular erections. Now I can't count on them. Talk to me. Help test me. Find out what's going on here. Because this is, I value my sexuality. It's a part of my pleasure. It's a part of my relationship. And I'm not willing to give it up.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
One of the things I find interesting about thinking about your audience is we have some people who are in very long-term relationships and having sex with the same person for 30 or 40 years.
Right.
And another group of people who are single, as you said, and dating. Mm-hmm. What are the unique challenges of these different populations?
Okay, that's going to take us a while, okay? But thank you for asking that because that's so important. So starting with the long-term relationships, if we've been in a relationship for 30, 40, 50 years with the same person, it has probably gotten stale. So we need to find ways to spice it up. I have a lot in my new book, and in fact in all my books, but particularly the new book, The Ultimate Guide to Sex After 50, about first of all having the conversation and how to have it. You don't ever want to come off as accusing the other person, blaming or shaming the other person. What you don't want to say is, you know, I'm not enjoying sex with you anymore. Oh, does that hurt to hear? But if instead you said something like, my sexual responses have changed, and I'll bet yours have too. Could we explore some new ways to give each other pleasure? Now, who can't hear that, right? Mm. Wouldn't you respond well to that with, yeah, what are we talking about here? And I have many ways in the book to open the conversation because it's often really, really hard to talk about sex if you haven't been doing it all along. And sometimes we really need to try something drastically new. Other times it might be quite simple, like bringing in a sex toy. Let's say we're used to having a particular style of touching, but it's not working anymore either because our arousal has changed or because, let's say, our partner's arthritic wrists don't let him or her go long enough to bring us to orgasm because it just plain takes longer. So you bring in a well-chosen, well-placed sex toy, it can make the difference between orgasm or no orgasm. It's because sometimes that's simple. Mm. So that's not in any way an exhaustive list of what to do, but maybe it can give people an inkling of, oh my gosh, there are lots of things we haven't tried. Role-playing fantasies. For some people, it's opening up the relationship to different partners. For other people, that's absolutely not the right thing. But for some, it is. And I don't judge what people decide they want to do. I just want to encourage people to get really well educated before they make a drastic change in their relationship. To find out what are the repercussions, what do they need to work on first in their communication style. I mean, there's so much. I could talk all day, and I know you don't want me to do that on one subject. But, okay, so let's switch to a new relationship. Single, dating, oh my gosh. That has a couple of chapters in my new book, and I actually give a workshop called How the Heck Do I Date at This Age? Yeah. Because everything has changed, and we have to face it with an open mind, a sense of humor, again, clear communication. We need to go into new relationships with a whole new way. It's changed since we were single. Maybe we haven't been single for 30, 40, 50 years. Things have changed. We have changed. What we're looking for in a relationship has changed. So dating has changed. How we do it, how the world does it has changed with online dating. That's where the people are. And I recommend that we get with it if we aren't already and get into online dating because, again, that's where the people are. We can be going to dances or singles events or hanging out at our favorite coffee shop, and we may never encounter the person who lives in our town who is looking for a relationship just like we are, but isn't in the same coffee shop at the same hour.
Right.
But maybe that person is on OkCupid or Match.com. We need to give this a try. And then we also need to be very clear about using safer sex precautions. And I have, again, a whole chapter, and I'm on a soapbox about this because so many of our age group think that, well, we can't get pregnant anymore. And he looks safe, and he says he was tested just last month. Yeah, but if he's willing to have unprotected sex with us, he's willing to have unprotected sex with other people. He probably did. So we need to take care of our own sexual health by saying that we use barrier protection every time with everyone until such time as we are in a committed relationship and it has gone on for 3 to 6 months and is continuing, and it's exclusive. And at that point, we get tested because then the test results are meaningful. They're not meaningful if we're continuing to have unprotected sex with people. Then they're not going to tell us anything. So it's just so important, instead of saying, so when were you tested last, or what were your test results, or you don't have anything, right? Which so many people do. It is astounding to me that so many people think that's taking care of things. It's not. Instead, it's having what I call the condom conversation, which can go something like, these are the condoms I prefer. What do you prefer?
And
as simple as that.
Great advice for people of any age.
It is, absolutely. It's just that at our age, we can be careless.
Right.
And it's sort of the norm to be careless, I have to say. And we need to stop that. We need to take care of ourselves. And condoms can be very sexy. I find them sexy. I think the sound of the condom packet ripping is a really sexy sound because it means I am about to have sex with someone.
Beautiful.
I love it. You know, I love condoms.
Great.
And I don't want this to be all heteronormative either. If you're in a lesbian relationship, or if you're, you know, whatever kind of relationship you're in, barrier protection, whether it's dental dams or condoms, are very important. We just need to take care of our sexual selves. That's it.
On that note, do you come across people who are coming out later in life when it wasn't an option for them earlier?
Yes. There are two things going on. One is, and it seems to happen more with women who want to explore a same-sex relationship who didn't in the past. And there seem to be two things going on. One is that they always wanted to, but it wasn't accepted, as you're saying. It wasn't an option. It was considered, I mean, when we were growing up in the 50s, or even the 60s, it was assumed that, yes, we were going to have a relationship with a man. We're going to get married to a man. And they may be saying, okay, been there, done that. But now I really want to explore this attraction to women that I've really always had. Or it can happen in a different way. It's what Lisa Diamond calls sexual fluidity, that we may change as we age. We may have thought we were heterosexual, and now it feels like, you know, women are more attractive to us. We're feeling that zing, and we want to explore that. And we may then find that that's where we want to be now. It's very interesting how that happens. With men, it can happen also. It happens more that men that always were attractive to other men, but didn't dare explore it or didn't feel that they could. They felt that they would be losing something. They would, you know, it was illegal at times. Gay bars were being raided and people carted off to jail. This is what we were raised in. Unfortunately, so much has changed, and it's changed often because of the sexual activists of our generation. And a lot of young people, I hope there are young people listening to this, a lot of young people don't know that the sexual freedom that they enjoy now happened because of the sexual activists of my generation. I'm 71 right now as we're recording this. But the people who came of age in the 50s and 60s who said, no, we're not going to accept this. We are not going to accept this. We are going to make sure we have our rights, even if it means we get carted off to jail now, even if it means we lose our jobs, we lose our relationships, we lose our family, we lose our faith community. So many people were willing to risk that, and because of that, it's normal now. And I just want us to appreciate the people who risked all that and sometimes lost all that. It's so precious to us now to have those rights and to have laws that don't impinge on our sexual rights. We just need to be grateful to the people who came before us. And, you know, I really feel emotional about that, and absolutely, I hope people respond to that.
Absolutely. We must remember our history and be able to look past, to look forward about what we want next for the next generation.
That's right. And we need to learn about that history. We often don't. You know, we think, well, it's always been like this. The only thing new is gay marriage. No, yeah, that's not the only thing new.
Yeah. And when thinking about that past, we asked a bunch of our community members if they had questions for you. And some of the things that came up were, when we're talking about folks over 50, we're looking at a generation that, for the most part, grew up with very sex-negative messages. And they're wondering how to introduce sex positivity and ideas about sexual freedom to people they're dating. How can we introduce these ideas to people who may be very new to the concepts?
Very often, because of our upbringing, I call it unlearning our upbringing. It takes people talking out loud about it, and talking out loud in a matter-of-fact way, which is something I do, but I'm not the only one who does that. We can all do that. People tell me after they hear me speak, you talk about this in just such a matter-of-fact way that you made me feel comfortable. Mm. We can all do that. We don't have to titter about it. We don't have to, you know, put our hand in front of our mouths or raise our eyebrows or go, oh, I know you're embarrassed to talk about this, but we're not embarrassed to talk about it. Let's just talk about it as if it were normal, and we will make it normal. As Jean-Luc Picard said, make it so.
So through your own comfort, inviting other people into that comfort zone.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if young people say to their grandparents, talk to me about what your sexual upbringing was like, that is a little easier to get the conversation going than it would be to say, talk to me about what sex is like now, which is really what you want to know eventually. But if you start with, what were you taught about sex that's different from what I'm taught about sex? Can we just talk about that? Can we get that, open that conversation? Maybe someone who would not answer the question, what is sex like for you now, would answer that one because it's in the past. And then we can go from there into, well, how did you unlearn that, or did you? Hmm. You know, we just need to have an accepting way of opening the conversation that isn't going to make people go, oh, don't you ask me about that. And it may not work. I have to say it may not work, but it may. And imagine how your dialogue would be different from now on if that works for you. Yeah, that gives me shivers to imagine. I wish I'd learned that lesson in time.
That's a powerful idea. And I know for myself, when I told my grandparents what I do for a living, there was some awkwardness at first. And then my grandfather started cracking jokes once in a while, and a comfort developed over time. And
yeah,
Yeah, it was a nice part of our relationship before he passed.
Good for you.
Yeah. So you say in the book that, quote, the changing male sexual response is not a reason to panic, but an opportunity to see sex differently and enjoy it fully.
Yes.
End quote. What do you mean by that? How does male sexuality change later in life? And how specifically can we recontextualize our idea of pleasure?
Great question. Well, men in our generation particularly, but probably all generations, were brought up with the I am my penis mentality.
Yeah.
You know, if the penis is working well, all's right with the world. If it isn't, nothing can be right with the world. So as sex changes for male bodies, erections become less dependable. Sometimes you have an erection, sometimes you don't. Maybe you do, but it doesn't last long enough for penetration. Or maybe you do, but the panic about it not lasting makes sure it doesn't last. Because that's our worst enemy is anxiety. Mm-hmm. Anxiety depletes an erection faster than anything else. So what we need to do is see sex differently. It's not all about the erection. You can please a partner without an erection. You can please a partner of any gender, any orientation, without an erection. Learn to do that. And my book has a lot of tips for how to do that. Also, you can have, you guys, can have orgasms without erections. And most men don't know that. Mm-hmm. They have no idea that the two are not the same thing, that erection and ejaculation are not the same, that the pleasure center in our brains, the neurological responses, that can happen whether we have an erection or not. Mm-hmm. So if we are, let's say, we are partnered with a man with erectile difficulties, and we want to normalize non-erection-centered sex, we can say, let me give you sensations. Would you just lie back? Tell me what feels good that I'm doing to you now. It can be all over body touching and massage. It can be massaging a flaccid penis. That can feel really good. It can be oral sex on a flaccid penis. But if we say, just don't worry about whether this erection happens or not. I am really going to enjoy making love to you. And I would like you to tell me or give me signals to let me know what you enjoy that I'm doing so that I know what pleases you. For one thing, that is allowing the penis owner to enjoy sensations, to see sex in a different way, to communicate about what feels good, and maybe even to figure out for the first time what feels good that is not so penis-centered. And I would say if the partner will just give that pleasure first without expecting reciprocation, and then at a different time, and maybe he's going to say, well, you know, what are you getting out of this? And you say, let me just learn what pleases you, and that's going to be really exciting for me. And then later, or maybe tomorrow, I would like you to give me pleasure that doesn't depend on your penis at all. And let's explore how that works. Doesn't that sound like fun?
It sounds like a whole different approach to sex that we should all try regardless of age. And I think so much of your advice resonates in that way, that it's great, solid advice for everyone. And there are certain things that are more important as you age, but really we can all benefit from learning from you. So thank you.
You know, I love hearing you say that, because if we learned that early, we wouldn't have to go through the anxiety as we age. Right. We would already have that in place. You know, pinch my nipples, or yes, please pleasure me with your mouth. I love that. And just whether or not I get an erection, that is no reflection on you. That doesn't mean I'm not attracted to you. It just means maybe that's how my penis works or doesn't work today. And we don't have to make that a reason to say, oops, sex isn't on the agenda today. Yeah, it is. It isn't about the erection.
It's beautiful. And another thing that came up with our community members is the idea of feeling sexy out in public as an older person. One woman asked, I'm newly single at 60 and want to go out and feel sexy again. But when I dress up a little, I feel like people look at me like I am foolish. How do I dress and feel sexy in a way that is still age appropriate, whatever that means?
Ooh, I love that. I totally love that question because that's so much, the self-image and body image is so much a part of whether women feel sexy or not. It's internal. We have to take that power back. The way that question was worded, I feel sexy, I'm dressing sexy, I go out and then I look at people looking at me and I suddenly I get, you know, it all falls apart. If we have the attitude, and juicy is an attitude, it isn't about lubrication of genitals. It's about our attitude. It's in our brains. If we take that power back and we don't let people on the outside decide whether we're sexy or not, we don't let the images on TV or in the magazines, you know, we have age-defying cosmetics. And who is showing us the age-defying cosmetics? A 40-year-old at the most. Come on. We can embrace aging. We don't have to say, you know, I hate the term anti-aging. I've been approached sometimes of people who want to put ads on my blog, which is, by the way, nakedatourage.com. Companies want to place ads on my blog that have anti-aging in their message. And I say, no, I don't want, anti-aging is dying young. Come on, give me a break. I love aging. I want pro-aging. That's the kind, that's all I want. So if we will embrace aging, wear something that makes us feel sexy, and it doesn't have to be show-offy. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. It might be that under our regular clothes, we are wearing sexy lingerie. And when we put it on, we touched ourselves and we looked in the mirror and maybe we took a selfie. And we know we look good under these clothes. Maybe we're showing a little cleavage, or maybe if our best asset is our hips, we're wearing hip hugging or whatever it is where we feel sexy. And then we go out with that attitude. We hold ourselves in a posture and we do our walk with a spring and we have that twinkle in our eyes that, yeah, and we make eye contact with people. And if they look at us, we look back and we look back with the attitude, yeah, I know. I know I'm sexy. Yeah, this is what sexy looks like at 75 or 80. This is what sexy looks like. Thank you for noticing. If we have that attitude instead of, oh my gosh, you're judging me, totally different, and it's in our brains. It's all us. We have total power to decide which way we want that conversation to go.
Indeed. And one of the things Charlotte does that I love, and I'm trying to do it more, is really compliment other women and
Yes.
say, you know, you look beautiful in that scarf. It really brings out the color of your eyes. And it really uplifts people to hear that, especially from other women. And
I do that all the time. I'll stop a woman in front of me in line at Trader Joe's and say, that hairstyle's perfect for you. Or, I love the way you look in that blouse. Where did you get it? You know, and you know, I compliment men too because we tend to ignore men, or we think with our old selves, oh, if we compliment a man, he'll think I'm coming on to him. I will say to a man, your white hair is so beautiful. And the guys will say, oh, well, thank you. It doesn't, you know, it isn't one of these, oh, leering was what are you doing later? Sometimes I wish it were, but the point is, if we get this conversation out to other people of our generation and we're free with it and we're matter of fact with it, it doesn't have to be a big deal. I bet nobody told you that before. No, I really like your hair, or I love the spark in your step, or it's obvious you exercise. What do you do? Because it really shows in the way you carry yourself.
And speaking of exercise, from your previous work with fitness, do you think keeping active and moving is an important part of maintaining your sexuality into your older years?
It's essential. It's essential for several reasons. We have no control over some of the things that happen to us. I have medical conditions that I never asked for, but it is so important for me to control what I can control, which is to get good exercise, to keep myself as strong, as fit as I can, because That's life insurance. It's life insurance and it's health insurance. It totally is. And it's sex insurance. Because I am fit, I have a better sexual response than someone who isn't. Because exercise promotes blood flow, not just to the muscles, also to the brain, also to the genitals. Mm. And in fact, they found that people who exercise right before having sex have a better sexual response than people who don't. And by better sexual response, I mean their arousal is faster and their orgasms are faster and stronger. Well, then who wouldn't want to exercise?
It is good motivation.
Yeah.
And that can just look like starting by taking a walk in the evening. It doesn't have to be jumping into the gym if you've been sedentary for a while, right?
As a fitness professional, I say the best exercise is the one you will do.
Mm.
So who cares if people say you need hardcore cardio for your heart? If what you would do is walk in the park or dance in the evening, whatever it is that you love, do Zumba or do whatever, yoga, Pilates, all of these are worthwhile. Whatever you would do, whatever you would show up for, that's your best exercise.
Perfect. And many of our listeners are over 50, but just as many are younger. What wisdom do you want to give to our younger audience from your experience?
Everything I've said today applies. Everything I've said. I would say, listen to the podcast again, younger folks, and figure out how can you incorporate this into your life now. It means that when you get to be my age, it's going to be a simple transition instead of one that is where we go, oh my gosh, this isn't working anymore. What do we do instead? You won't have to do that because you said, all right, I'm already doing all these things and it's a simple transition. Oh, and yes. One more thing I have to say. Young people, talk to your elders. Talk to your elders and the kinds of things we're saying today, like compliment someone. You don't have to be 71 to compliment someone in their 70s. You can do that now. You can say, gosh, you look gorgeous. You inspire me. That's not going to offend anyone.
Hmm. Beautiful. So your new book, The Ultimate Guide to Sex After 50, How to Maintain or Regain a Spicy, Satisfying Sex Life, is available now. And where else can we find you and if we want to learn more?
You can find me at my website, joanprice.com. You can also find me on my blog, which has been going for 10 years, which is nakedatourage.com. It is senior sex news, views, and reviews, including 70 reviews of sex toys from a senior perspective.
Amazing. You offer such a beautiful resource for us all. Thank you for doing the work you're doing.
Well, thank you. And I so appreciate being on your podcast and you ask the best questions.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Joan Price. And no matter what your age, remember that you can take steps to enjoy your sexuality and welcome more pleasure into your world. Come on over to pleasuremechanics.com to join our weekly newsletter for your free weekly dose of erotic inspiration. When you are ready to master new sexual skills, check out our erotic mastery courses, which will help you ignite more pleasure no matter if you are in your 20s, 50s, 70s, or beyond. Use the code SPEAKINGOFSEX for 20% off the online course of your choice. We'll be back with you next week for a new episode of Speaking of Sex. See you then. I'm Chris from PleasureMechanics.com. Cheers.